Hey guys, this is Jill, and welcome back to the Sports Ethos Kings podcast.
This week, I have the hosts of Cowball Talk Spaces, Megalou, Daily Sabonis, and John Catterson. And then John also is the host of the Royal Review podcast. Let's get started.
I'm Megalou on Twitter. I got together with these guys after you sort of started up the Twitter fan spaces for Sacramento Kings. And we've formed like a regular group, and we do them after almost every game if we can. And they're just an open forum for fans to come in and kind of say whatever they want to say, which I think we all love. And then I also host an NBA book club that John and I regularly go to every month. And we just sort of run through whatever books we think are pertinent, either to the Sacramento fan base or just basketball in general. And I'm just a Sacramento Kings fan.
My name is John Catterson. That's my display name on Twitter too, but my handle is CatterJ12, and I host a podcast on the Kings. I told most of the guests that come on that the reason I have a podcast on the Kings is so I can talk about the Kings for an hour for one week with someone new every week about the Kings, and it's called Royal Review. And I'm also part of the Cowboy Talk Twitter Spaces that Daly and Megalou are also part of. I did want to take a little time. Did not tell my origin story as a Kings fan, but the origin story that I remember from Cowboy Talk, I think everyone has probably a different story for how it started, but it really started with Jill. I think you were adopting what the Raptors fans were doing in preseason and started spaces for fans. You know, like basically the distinctive feature, I think, of our Cowboy Talk is that we're open forum. So anyone can come up and talk if you want to talk. If you're respectful, essentially, you can talk. And so feel free to check it out after the games when we have our spaces. But I went to those and those were fun. And then those faded away after a while, after a few games into the season, probably like 10 or 12 or so, they faded away. And I was kind of, you know, sad, but and then I saw Megalou host a space, and Daily Sabonis was in there, and I went in there, and we had fun. So eventually, I started to invite by DM, and so I invited Daily Sabonis, I invited Megalou, I invited other people, and there was probably about, I don't know, maybe like 15 people, the first one that kind of was actually functional, and it kind of took up over after that and grew from there, and we do it after every game now. So feel free to check it out if you're listening to this.
I know you guys had over 70 in the last one. Gone up.
Yeah, I think it's contingent upon when the Kings are either making moves or if they're winning. I think when they win, more people join, or when a big trade happens. Our friend Elizabeth had one right after the Halliburton trade, and she had like, I think, 1,500. Like, it was crazy because everybody wanted to tune in and see what that was about and watch the fire burn as everyone panicked, right? So, yeah, so I wanted to join with John and Meg in spaces, because after hearing them, they would call in to Deuce and Moe as well. Or I would hear John call in to, I think, the King's Herald. And I said to myself, okay, these sound like responsible people. You can't just do it with anybody. There's a lot of toxic fans out there, I feel. And I felt like they were fairly positive and had something to say. So yeah, I thought, what better partners to have than these two? And the rest is history. And yeah, we enjoy it a lot. We like our little community that we've created. And yeah, it's neat. And I'll have a teaser on Tuesday and a full announcement on Thursday. So I do have some things cooking, and it's exciting.
Be sure to tune in. I love that you guys picked it back up. It did. I think it fizzled. Like, I stopped doing it in somewhere in November. It just got a lot. And honestly, because I didn't cut it off, I was going till like 1 o'clock on some of the nights. And I was just like, I can't do it anymore. Because we had people from like across the pond joining in. And I love that it just gave a space for people that wanted to kind of vent or just get it out. But it is a really cool platform feature that they've offered and given a space to. Because, and I will say that for the most part, Kings fans that hop on are pretty respectful compared to some of the other ones that some of the other fan base ones that I will hop on and listen to, like you said, to watch things burn, because it can get pretty toxic and ugly. So for everyone that does join in between your guys's and then Deuce and Mo when they do theirs, for the most part, everyone has a good time, because at the end of the day, it's been so long. We all just want to see it turn around. Like, right. It's the fact that many people are still tuning in and watching games and talking about it and giving ideas. It's end of the day, we all want the same thing. So I do love that you guys kept that going and kind of created your own niche in it too. So kudos to you guys for that. first question we're going to go with today is I just want to get your general overview thoughts on the summer, whether it be Monty, Keegan, Coach Brown, the trade for Herder, Monk, free agency, like anything involving the summer as a whole.
Well, I'll start. And I just recall, like, as soon as the season ended, I just felt like the Kings had so many holes. And of course, the coach being the main issue with the Kings. So, yeah, I don't mean to go down the timeline, but that's just how I think in sequence. So it's like, yeah, May 9th, Mike Brown gets hired. And that was the main thing. And I was super excited. Now, I will admit that I did want the hotshot assistant, whoever that may be. But then after thinking about it, and then after your Twitter post along with Drew and King's Film Room, after everybody just started analyzing Mike Brown and you started thinking about it, it's like, well, we have experience and we have, and I think the main thing that got me and it got most of us was the fact that he was a total basketball nerd, detail oriented guy. And you know, I was thinking, well, everyone grows. And so he was still successful. He just hasn't won a championship yet, right? And so let his third tenure as a coach be the one where he finally gets it together. You never know. And I think this may be it for him as far as really knowing what he's doing and pull all of his experiences to become the best coach that he can be. And then we drafted Keegan, who I wanted, and I was super excited. I think good draft picks are basically everything bagels, right? They could do so many skills, which he can. And we'll get on him later because I'm sure we're going to talk about Summer League. And so there were still holes in our roster, but then we got Kevin Herter and Malik Monk. And I was elated because we know about their shooting and how they perform on the basketball court. So then everything got better. And then, of course, we get to KZ, Chima, and Dellavedova. And it's like, if there was a hole in a roster that I was concerned about, it was the fact that we don't have vertical threats and or people who are twitchy and athletic that could guard the perimeter. And now we finally have them. And they proved it in Summer League. And I know a lot of people doubted KZ and Chima, but I think after a few games, everybody kind of chilled on, oh no, Keegan should start, right? So yeah, I felt really good about what they did. I feel like Monty built a hell of a shark tank along with Mike Brown's guidance for our training camp. So yeah, I feel like they're battle tested now in a way.
I think my favorite move is probably just Mike Brown and then how much he has like empowered his entire staff, how much we've heard about them all going out and satelliting to each and every player, making sure they're comfortable when they get here, calling guys before he was even the actual coach, like calling Chima and saying, hey, I think I might have a spot for you. Like, I think you can help us. Like, so I think that level of like empowerment and, you know, of his assistants, number one, and then number two of the players, I think is probably what's most exciting to me. But just like Daly said, I'm very excited to have length, shooting, twitchiness, and more defense. And I think seeing the Summer League games, even though a couple of them were kind of ugly, we still managed to like pull out wins, and the ugly ones more with like defense than with just pure shooting. So that's exciting to me.
Well, I was more in favor of at the end of the beginning of, I think it was Darvin Ham, Will Hardy, and Charles Lee were the candidates. I may have that wrong, but and I would like to have seen Sam Cassell be a candidate, but basically because of what Joe was talking about earlier in the season. But I understand what they're going for there. You know, they gotta the Kings ownership and management can't be taking a flyer on someone who's promising in the coaching. They gotta go with someone established. So it was between Mike Brown, Steve Clifford, and Mark Jackson. Jackson just comes with too much stuff in the baggage, I guess I would say, you know. Clifford and Brown, either one was fine with me because they brought defense. Either one was going to bring defense. I knew Clifford was going to bring defense. And getting to know Brown, you know, as a fan, he's good for the Kings. You know, I like this detail oriented. I'm not so sure about this offense where we're going to conceptual basketball, but it makes sense of what he said. You know, he said, and I'm definitely paraphrasing, but he said that if you have a play, essentially, and you call a play, the other team's going to scout it, and they're going to scout that play and know what you're doing and counter it. So to make conceptual basketball without plays is what they're trying to get towards. So I like that. I'll go ahead and not try to like change history and say that I was basically from a place of not knowing that much. I was in favor of drafting Jaden Ivey. I'll admit that too. You know, I didn't know that much. I just knew that on the consensus big boards, he was slightly above Keegan Murray. And we had a hole at shooting guard as well back then, you know. We had Dante DiVincenzo, which turned out he gave him up, but we released his restricted rights. But you know, we had a hole at shooting guard as well as a hole at power forward. And but we drafted Keegan Murray, and he has been great. You know, I can't deny that. He's been awesome. And I'm just wondering how much he can do now, you know? And I'm also wondering, I mean, it's kind of silly to say this about any rookie, because most rookies don't really contribute to winning, I've been told. But how much can he raise the ceiling of the team? Because movement shooting, check. You know, I think we all know he's a movement shooter, and we saw that from Summer League at least. Can he defend? He can defend fours. Can he defend threes? We saw him run 7 pick and rolls in the Laker game, you know, first Laker game. King's film room saw that. So can he run pick and rolls? Can he distribute well? You know, what's his ceiling? It seems like he can't spot the ceiling just yet. So it keeps going up. So we're looking forward to seeing how much he can raise the ceiling of this whole team.
Yeah. And it's almost like too, besides what he can unlock within himself, but what can his play unlock in possibly other players like Fox? Does it, having that another extender out there, you know, does it make his life easier? Like, you know, Sabonis makes his life easier. So I know, I think it was James Hamm on with D'Lo and KZ today. He made a comment about where if KZ's in there and he's doing his job on defense and is taking that load off of the other guys, can they then help him by kind of taking off some of the offensive load and vice versa? So I think the same thing with Keegan. Not only are we seeing that he can kind of is a jack of all trades, but what can he unlock from your stars essentially of your team that you currently have? So I think that's going to be exciting to watch too, besides just what he can do, but how he can affect the other players as well.
Yeah. And that's another thing about this roster that Monty and Mike Brown have constructed, is that this is the first time in a long time that we're not expecting our roster, our rookie, to be the savior. It's like we're going to develop him slowly, even though I think he's going to play his way into 25 minutes or more a game, just because he has no nerves at all and he plays like a 5-year vet, right? And so it's a wonderful thing to have. And so when I'm doing my projections or what this team could do, I don't even consider Keegan, just because he's going to be doing great things on his own. And everything else he does for the team is just going to be icing on the cake, right? There's going to be no pressure on him at all. And I think that's great for his career.
Well said. Yeah.
I like Herter as a player, of course, but I also like, as far as trading that pick, you know, I like that Herter, I believe, was starting his second deal this year, or at least this is second year of his deal. But I'm pretty sure he's starting his second deal. So he's got like 4 years left on his deal, right? So
465, I believe it is.
Okay.
I think last year was his, he signed it last year, which means it goes into effect this season. Like it didn't go into effect last year, I think, but it goes into effect this year. I think you're right.
I was just looking up Kevin's contract. I was just going to just say to you that like, along with the coaching appreciation, I think the scheme has really stood out to me, because the first couple games where Keegan was in, and he did look like a savior in some ways, like it was like, holy crap. I mean, somebody put the stats out and he shot like 70%. From three. Like, I know he didn't play all the games, but it was like, oh my gosh, this guy's a miracle. But then he was out, and yes, we had ugly games, but there was still a scheme for other guys to fit into. So to me, that's another exciting part, is it's not just the guys having to star every single time. It's going to be what they're supposed to be doing, where they're playing in the scheme.
Yeah, I think it kind of gave Terrence Davis a little bit, him being out, we kind of got to see him go in more. And I think it was a good reminder, because he was playing so well before he got hurt last season. And he kind of became that microwave again this preseason. So I think it was good for him to get some run, just because we're still not sure exactly what rotation wise. And even Brown said, those 10, he could, you know, the last three he could mix in depending on matchups and things like that. So I think it was good that those guys did get some more run that they might not have gotten had he not been out too. And it'll be a good test these first couple of games, because I don't think he'll be here on Wednesday. I would imagine not at this point.
I don't think so either. It doesn't sound like it. All right, just for the record, Kevin's contract starts this year, 14 mil, then next year, 15, up and up and up. And then he's a free agent in 2026.
Love that. Yeah. And with so many of the deals that were being signed, his 65 million seems like an absolute steal.
Yeah, it really
with does. Some of these contracts that are going out.
They just signed, like, the Hawks just signed DeAndre Hunter to like a 4-year 95, which to me, Kevin was more of an integral part of their. I mean, I get DeAndre's younger, etc., but you're bringing in Kevin as like a vet, length, defense, chill vibes, you know, obsessive compulsive about the trick shot. What more can you ask for?
But yeah, he kind of had to be that player with Atlanta too, that jack of all trades player. He was asked to play point guard. When Bogey would go out, he was, you know, having to play the two. And then when Trey was out, he was playing the one. And then when Hunter was out, he was playing the three. So he was having to do so many different things. And so, yeah, I do think that, yeah, that's going to end up going down as one of the best moves that Bonnie has made by far. What are your guys' thoughts on the final roster? And did anything surprise you throughout the process? Do you have any preferences on kind of what any Stockton Kings players that they could possibly go after? I know they have to do the draft and all that stuff, but when it comes to free agency for some of those other ones, I think they might still be able to try and grab some of them. So depending on if they, what kind of contract they had, if they had a G League contract before. I know there's all kinds of weird rules about it, but if there's anyone that you're keeping an eye on that you'd like to see them go after, throw it out there. But other than that, if you want to give your thoughts on how the Kings played out their final roster spots.
Meg, I'll have you go first, but I just want to say that I really do want to see Kata and Keon Ellis by the time we get into the playoffs. I think they'll help us tremendously, and it'll be exciting to watch them grow as the year goes on. But Meg, go ahead and take this question first.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really happy with the guys we kept. I think those probably would have been my choice as well. Obviously, I'm not in the actual room with them, you know, and like, I think Chima's interviews were really illuminating, where he said they did like some scripted, they did just like pickup basketball, and then they did some scripted kind of events, and then they did drills, and he was kind of having some troubles with the scripted events, but watched film with Jordy and Mike and was able to like kind of accelerate his understanding of the game. And so I'm really happy with the guys we kept. The first night that Deli played in the space, we had just like a total Aussie fest in there of people just like, you know, they were so hyped on the Outback Jesus and just so excited to see him playing again. So I'm happy for that level of vibes. And then KZ has been tremendous in my view. I really, really thought Sam was good too. I think he kept getting put like at the end of the roster whenever people would talk about it. But I thought he's somebody that I would try and keep in the system if I could. And I know he's more complicated because he was not given an Exhibit 10 and whatever like complications there are with that. But I definitely think he's like a solid player, and I could see someone like the Warriors picking him up off the dust pile too. So for me, I feel like we kept the highest vibe guys. I'm with that. Love it. Yeah, those would have been my picks too.
I mean, for me, I just look at this roster and it's like, where are the holes? I don't see any. And I know there are people out there, oh, it's like, well, you don't have a superstar. Well, stars are made. And I think we'll definitely have stars if we make the playoffs. And then because of that, then they're going to recognize our best players as stars, right? So we have long-range threats now. We have mid-range and people who could self-create. We have rim pressure now. And also, it's like, and I know people wanted to trade Barnes and Rashawn all summer. They were rumored to be traded. But it's like with Rashawn, he's one of our few vertical threats. And then we all know what Barnes can do. And I just don't think you could find 40% three-point shooters anywhere, especially because he could actually be like a third option hub where he could pass. He defends at least, you know, he's a plus defender to a point, right? He can't necessarily defend quicker threes, but he does a good job for what he does. And I think in a defined role, I think he's going to be huge for us. But yeah, with Chima and KZ and then Keegan and Monk, we have vertical threats now. So it's like there are no holes in this roster. We just need to see them in the playoffs to see who's going to take us to the next level. And I still believe in Fox. And rest in power, Jonathan Charks, he said on a podcast during Summer League, he said, I wish I could have somebody believe in me like the Kings believe in De'Aaron Fox. And I love that quote. And I still believe in him as a Fox truther, as they say. And we're going to find out. I think we should give him 2 years because we finally did right by him and built around him properly. He now has a coach who's a teacher that's going to teach him the finer points of the game to improve his game overall. So I'm super excited. So, yeah, I like this roster a lot.
Okay. Well, I took that to mean talking about kind of the guys towards the end. So that's what I was thinking
about. And just as a whole. Yeah.
As a whole. So okay.
Towards
okay.
the end and then as a whole.
Okay. I could incorporate one more thing in there for sure. And but I expected Sam Merrill to be cut. It was kind of too bad in my opinion, because he seemed like, as I saw other people say on Twitter, he seemed like he was trying to fit into the game plan every time he played. He was trying to fit into the system that they were running, which wasn't the Sam Merrill show. It was the King show, you know, so like he was trying to pass the ball when he wasn't wide open. To a guy that was more open than he was, you know, and he was, he seemed to be a good team player, and it's kind of sad that he had to go, but there's only 15 spots plus the two ways. So it kind of made sense, but it was just too bad, I guess. Bazemore, he looked good in the first game, that Laker game. And I'm not sure he looked bad in any other game, but it's just like, he's been, he couldn't play, as other people have said, he couldn't play on the Lakers last year. And they needed someone like him to play, someone like his profile. So that also made sense to me as well. And but the last one, though, with Cook, you know, I was going to be surprised either way, but for the third point guard, because I was surprised they cut Cook because of his three-point shooting. You know, he can really shoot the ball. We saw that in Stockton and at last season. And, you know, he could really shoot the ball. And Deli can really defend and be the tough-nosed defender and just have that dog in him, you know. So Brown wants that dog, the defender, and Monty was trying to provide shooters to Brown. So it kind of was going to surprise me the way whoever they cut, or maybe they were going to cut both. People were talking about them cutting both and just running the offense through Fox and Sabonis and Herter and Monk and so forth. And Davion, of course. And as far as like what we've seen with this roster, I'll talk about Paul a little bit. I was surprised, you know, that he started. I think everyone was. Probably Paul was surprised that he was starting that preseason game. But, I get it now. I just wish we have Herter and Barnes can shoot from distance. And Fox, hopefully he can distance. We've seen some flashes this preseason. So hopefully he's a good distance shooter now consistently for a while, you know. And then in that case, that's great. I mean, we have three shooters in that case. We have Paul to be defender and not need to shoot that much, because Sabonis needs to shoot. Those other three guys need to shoot, so, or at least to score. Paul does not really need to, so he can be the Herb Jones on this team and defend whomever. The other guys can get the shots up. That could work, yeah. And Keegan could feast on lower competition, but he'd have lesser. He could do well in the second unit and kind of grow into the starting role over the course of however many games. Whether that's 20. 40, whatever, 10, you know, whatever. He could grow into that role. So kind of what I see there. I like Monk's, I may be the only one seeing this. I may be imagining things because I don't see anyone else saying it, but I like Monk's playmaking. I like how he's taking a lot of shots, but I like how he kind of, you know, sets up others and looks for others. We need that in the second unit. I'm not sure if I prefer Davion or Monk as far as distributing goes. Monk seems more fluid to me. I know that's very general and I don't know. It just seems that way to me. And
he definitely has a lob pass. I think that was one thing that stood out to me. Is mm-hmm. he had, I don't know, maybe three really great lob passes to Rashawn. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That's something we really need. So that's fantastic.
Monk to Holmes could be could be great. Like if either one could score and Holmes could set a screen for Monk and then go from there and see what happens. That could become the new thing in the second unit for sure. That's pretty much all I have for the roster though.
I do think Monk will end up surprising a lot of people. I think a lot of people forget how well he played that last year and with the Hornets too. And they seem to really be happy with, after his previous issues. And then he started showing something, that last year. But I think it was one of those, like with the Lakers, right? Like, because you had those issues, prove it deal. Kind of like we saw. I'm not anyway comparing his like off the court stuff to Kevin Porter Jr. But like we just saw him get paid, but there were the clauses in there of the keep proving it deals. And you've even were him and Fox together and, finding the love of the game back together and things like that. As long as things, don't fall off the rails, it seems like that pairing could, we saw it last game, can be really good, where he said that they just have to look at each other. Like they can just give a look. They don't have to say anything and they know exactly what they're going to be doing. So outside of Herter, I think that does give Brown, more options in how he mixes and matches guys together as well. And when it comes to the end of, how the roster played out, I think we saw Brown, right, get his guys too, right? It was those three guys are his guys. Delly playing with him for years in Cleveland. And he's almost like having another coach, whether he plays or not, it's like having another coach we've heard out there on the bench. And then in case of emergency or blowout, you have almost like an extended, coach out on the court and someone who fought to get back, right? Like I think Barnes said today that when he's around Chima, it makes them really kind of recognize how lucky they are and how grateful they are to be in their positions, because these guys talk about their struggles or, how hard they had to work to get to this point, or in Delly's situation to get back to this point after injuries and then playing back in Australia and coming back, that it gives them another point of view to look at of, oh, wow. Things have been bad, but I'm still so extremely lucky to be playing the game and in the position I'm in and things like that. And so I do think that we haven't had necessarily those kind of guys, in a while, and having that mindset that can help. And I think just having guys who Brown are comfortable with and know what he wants, how he wants it, being able to throw guys out there like that is a nice luxury. And then to me, it just kind of shows the synergy between Brown and Monty and their visions and how they're working together. So
yeah, credit to the front office for getting high character guys. I love that all of our guys are veterans. Talented and high character, right? So we have people, most of them are married. It's not a bunch of young cats that are like, looking forward to the outfit picture in the beginning of the games. They're not high profile. Nobody's dating an Instagram model. Maybe Malik Monk later on. I don't know what his situation is, but it's like, and then we have Keegan, who pretty much acts like a settled down guy in his mid-30s. So it's like, it's beautiful. And I love that we don't have to stress about that. And we've talked about it before. It's like, it's kind of cool that the Kings are drama free this summer. And I think they will be for the rest of the season, right?
Yeah, I think their biggest hurdle is being able to get past adversity on the court. And when it comes to wins and losses and mitigating anything more than, a 3-4 game losing streak, not letting it get to 7 or 8 and things like that. I think, yes, nothing off the court, but it'll be on the court. Can they come together and figure it out defensively?
Well, to me, that's a lot of what I love about these end of the roster guys. And KZ starting actually is, to me, part of it is it's just Mike Brown putting his money where his mouth is. He says he's a defensive coach. That's what he values. That's what's going to buy you minutes. That's what's going to get you on the floor. That's what's going to keep you on the team. So, and I think all three of those guys pretty obviously have some really interesting defensive chops, So hopefully it kind of bleeds out into everybody else, except for Davion already had it. But even if they can just be the spot helpers, I'm super excited to watch that.
One last thing on this topic, I guess, is kind of like it was brought up earlier for me, is that I would like to see if Fox and Sabonis are staggered, which I think they could be because they were for the first half of two games. I think, let's see, Sabonis went out first both times they did it. And I'd like to see potentially Fox go out first so that when they stagger them, Fox can come back in with Monk and get some time with Monk. You know, I feel like that would be good for, because of their, like, they already have chemistry built in from back when they were in college, you know, so get them more time together in that way. If Monk is not going to start, Fox is certainly going to start. If Monk is certainly going to be on second unit, then try to stagger them that way. Be one last thing that I would look forward to seeing if they continue with the staggering.
Nope. I like it. Okay. How do you guys feel going into the season now that training camp's over? And then preseason's over now that we have our roster. How do you guys, what's your level of excitement, precaution? Like, how are you guys feeling?
Ring the bell. That's how I'm feeling. I'm excited. I'm always excited. So, you know, I wouldn't be a fan if I didn't get excited about it. Like, but I know, like, last season we did this whole, like, it feels different thing and stacking days and vibes are different and all that kind of stuff. And then it sort of fell apart, you know, 10 games in or whatever. But I really do think it's different. I think the vibes are different. I'm all in, you know. And I mean, from what I've seen so far, I'm already super excited about just watching the new players, even if that's all I get to do. I'm going to be hype with that, but I think we're going to make the playoffs. I feel really optimistic and I love what I've seen so far. And I know there's no crunch time in preseason and, you know, I know there's a lot of things that still need to get answered, but I also think that we could be like a 43-44 win team and still do really well in the West. I think our health is really good. I think our depth is really good. And I think they're going to fight like hell. And that was what I loved so much about the 39 win team. And was so fun to watch, is I never felt like they gave up on any plays. So even that would be a win for me, is just effort, heart, a bunch of Rashawns on the floor at the same time.
I feel really good as well. Even before the preseason, I felt really good about this team. I just, everything made sense. And yeah, I was pretty much just going on common sense and the Mike Brown sound bites. But sometimes you could just tell that things are changing for the better. I'm not going to put a ceiling on this team. You know, I think most people say play-in at the most, or maybe a playoff series and just being competitive. For me, I actually think they could win a playoff series. It just depends on who they're matched up against. And I think if we have our ducks in a row, and by the time February and March comes around and the playbook opens up for everybody and they get deeper and deeper into the system, and if everyone's bought in on defense, it's like, we're a tough out, I think. You know, and I think the 1-2 punch of De'Aaron and Sabonis is pretty dangerous if everything falls into place. We have rim pressure, and then we have perimeter shooting. It's like, pick your poison. This is the first time in a long time where we have a pick your poison offense, where it's like, well, if you double team so-and-so, well, they could just go ahead and pass it to someone else. And it's like, I think we're more dangerous than people realize. And I felt like during this summer, all the experts, in Vegas included, and some of our favorite YouTubers and podcasters, you know, their idea was, oh, you know, 35, 37 wins. And I just feel like if you think we're just going to improve by five games, you have zero faith. You're betting against pretty much Mike Brown, and you're betting against all the new talent that we have that actually makes sense. Like, all the new pieces actually make sense for the first time in a long time. So yeah, as Meg said, you know, barring health, and as long as our roster stays bought in on both ends of the floor, I think we're going to be more than fine, and we're going to be competitive. And after all, there's really only three or four elite teams. And then everybody else is just good. And I think now the Kings are actually good, where we're going to be in that good conversation. And even those elite teams, we may steal a game or two from them. I think it just makes sense that we're going to be a 500 or better team for sure.
I feel good. I mean, it's kind of, I definitely feel good. It's hard to feel not good at this point. You know, we didn't have the Phoenix Suns training camp. You know, we had the Sacramento Kings training camp, much like probably the 25 or six or seven other training camps, which were all pretty positive. Ours was pretty positive, and Mike Brown sounds good. He looks good. He's saying good things. Everyone's saying good things, and we're undefeated in preseason, right? So, most of those games, I would say the majority of those Habs, I would say, were good. You know, all of Portland, all the second LA, second half of first LA, and Phoenix was kind of questionable. But most of those, we look good, you know, and I feel good. I don't want to talk about too much about last season, but one thing that kind of frustrated me, and not to talk too bad about this particular player I'm going to talk bad about, but I am going to talk bad about him a little bit, I guess, if you want to say it that way. But like, we were 5-4. And I was thought I was wrong because I didn't predict a record that ended in, you know, a 5-4 percentage. And we were 5-4 and I was like, great, I'm wrong. Awesome. And then we got rebounded by Indiana in a loss by a lot. And then we were 5-5, of course, because we lost. And then Walton, I don't know if it was his idea. I'm not sure if it was. I guess you got to hang it on him, I guess. But he changed the lineup to address our rebounding. And what I'm getting at here is that, like, rebounding was never going to be a strength of that team. And so we have a strength that Monty added to the team through the players, and that's shooting and scoring. And I feel like I just want us – I would feel good if we play to our strengths and try to become a competent defensive team through Mike Brown and Jordy Fernandez and those guys, you know, and Doug Christie. I'm sure he teaches defense a lot in practice and training camp. Become a competent defensive team as best as we can be, but just score the heck out of the ball and just lean into our strengths. And I'm looking forward. I hope we see that we don't try to, like, you know, solve something that's not going to be solved, you know, except to be a trade. So I hope that we do that this season, and just what Megan was saying, you know, I don't need for it to be a success to see the playoffs. Kind of need the play in with so many teams tanking, you know, in the West, like four teams pretty much not going to be good, they think. I kind of need to see the play in, but I don't need to see the playoffs. I just need to see improvement. I need to see a direction. Strong effort every night would be great, you know, and just making that push to be good. And yeah, like you said, never giving up, just never give up. I'd be cheering for that team no matter what.
Yeah. That's and it. Even in terms of when it comes to defense improvement, like, I'm not even asking for top 10. I'm sure Brown has a probably completely different standard, but like, you guys know, I've said this for the first time in 16 years, just be at least average in team defense. And I think you would see a huge improvement when it comes to wins and losses, like just being average. We haven't had anything below, I think it's 22 in 16 years. Like, that's, and we know that's not going to cut it. And so, yeah, if Brown can, which Brown even, he did this with a bad Cleveland team when LeBron was gone and he was there only, I think it was only that 1 year. And Cleveland says they still wish that they did not fire him, but he had a bunch of not stars, if you want to, scrubs or whatever, but like, he had them in under 20. And so, like, we haven't even been able to do that with more talent. So if he can figure out just to get them average, which I have faith that he'll be able to do that. Or as LeBron has said, if you're not doing it, you're not going to, like, you won't see your minutes. And I do think that he will. I have a hard time envisioning him not keeping that kind of standard, that it's, you're doing this or you're going out. And we saw Terrence Davis say that, right, in preseason. And you saw him kind of teaching on it, and that he was like, yeah, I made three different, you know, defensive errors, and so he pulled me. Didn't matter what he was doing on offense or anything like that. It was like, no, you're out. And then he talked to him. He didn't yell at him. Like, it was like, hey, I want you. You could see his hand movement and gave him the butt tap. And, you know, you didn't see Terrence put his head down or anything like that. It was, he even admitted it after the game. Like, I know he believes that I can do this. I know I have to do this. And to me, that was a positive experience compared to previous regimes that we've seen here of holding players accountable and players holding themselves accountable and not finger pointing and just saying, they believe I can be better. I know I can be better. This is what I have to do. And so, again, we know it's preseason, but I thought that even that mindset was an improvement from years past that we've seen.
Yeah, I think we're going to be better defensively than people realize. Considering our personnel, I do believe that the better defensive teams do have a twitchy athletic, like, absolute stud. And but I was looking at it. I was looking at defensive ratings for teams, and it's like, okay, Dallas came in seventh last year, and it's like, who do they really have? And I know Dorian Finney-Smith is an absolute stud on defense, but then after him, who else is there as far as who's exceptionally a strong defensive player? I think Luka, as far as his basketball IQ, I think he understands passing lanes and stuff like that. So I think that's major. Reggie Bullock is above average, but I don't think he's like super all NBA. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then I think Dwight Powell is their rim protector. But it's like, yeah, we have Rashawn. We now have KZ. We have Chima if he gets minutes. We know that De'Aaron can actually guard players when motivated, and I think he will be this year. And I think Keegan's going to be a plus defender just based on his basketball IQ. He's not necessarily the twitchy, super bouncy guy, but he can defend. So I think we're going to be better than people realize.
Yeah, it's can you do it as a team, right? Like, you don't necessarily need to have that defensive player of the year player. Like, it, as Fox and other ones have said, if you can move on a string with each other and play team defense, like, you should be able to handle what you're doing. Because yes, you're not going to stop everybody all the time, but when it counts, can you, you know, not hurt yourself?
Yeah, in my question.
Yeah, and even I want to say, like, these preseason games, I felt like Sabonis was more vocal. I felt even Fox was more vocal when he hasn't been before. It kind of seems like everyone was pointing, talking, yelling to each other. And that was very different compared to years past.
Yeah, and I think people underestimate what team defense can do and players moving on a string, like you said. My question is, and I know not all teams have this, but it'd be nice to have, who is our Draymond? Who is going to be that player coach on the defensive end that's going to be calling out the plays? We would want it to be Sabonis, and it's probably going to be Rashawn when he's in there, and I don't know if they're ever going to play together. We know Davion is probably that guy, but it's kind of hard to do being the point of attack. So it's, yeah, we'll see who our anchor is, so to speak. And that'll be really interesting.
I think Dallas is a great, maybe not comp, but like a great thing to shoot for, because a lot of the talking heads I follow before last season were like, wow, Dallas made such a big mistake hiring Jason Kidd for his third coaching job. He's not that good. He's blah, 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 blah. And then now they're all saying, well, I was wrong. You know, Jason Kidd instilled strong defense in the Dallas Mavericks and made them a good defensive team, you know, and hopefully that can happen in Sacramento with Mike Brown, you know, can do that for our squad and make them a good defensive team. And that'd be great to be like Dallas in that regard. So
do you guys have any last minute additions that you want to throw out there?
No, Daly has a good one. I just want to say, for me, I try in my own life to be as positive as possible, build people up. You know, I've been a manager many, many times. I find that, like, you know, if you can build people up and identify what they're great at and activate that in them, you have a better team. So I know that's not basketball, but it's been so refreshing to hear Mike Brown's comments about the players, their IQ, their work ethic, Dudley's energy. I just love hearing the positivity that is coming out of the press conferences. And we've also seen the harder, you know, keep them accountable stuff too. But I never feel like it's a negative thing. I feel like it's like, I'm the coach. This is my job to reel these bad habits in, to get people to a place where they are disciplined on the floor without me. And this is how I do it, by continually reminding. So I just, especially I think the KZ, Chima, Deli, he just spoke so highly of them. And it was so nice, because I was just getting really down on Luke, especially would be like, well, they can't do that, or they, you know, they don't get it. Or, and it was just kind of like, is it really all their fault? I know it maybe was, I'm not saying it wasn't, but still, like, build up your employees, you know, make them feel good about themselves, or they're not going to perform good. So.
Yeah. I just want to say, as far as the future goes, I think Keegan is actually a player that we could actually build around, and he'll probably be a major offensive hub for us in about 2 or 3 years. Just thinking about how he's growing. Have you ever seen the fat guy video where he's watching this meal being made, and he's constantly getting excited as more ingredients are being added? That's what Keegan is to me. So this guy's watching this video where he sees pancake batter going into the pan. He's like, oh, pancakes. Oh, yeah. And then he sees the guy, while the pancake batter is still cooking, throw in a sausage patty. And then he gets even more excited. He goes, oh, this is fat guy stuff. And yeah, I'm paraphrasing. You said something else, but I'm trying to keep it PG for you, Jill. And then he sees the guy throw an egg on top of that. And so he's super excited as the video goes on. And I feel like that's how I am with Keegan. It's like, in college when I watched him, he would make tough shots and he was really physical. And so that's like the pancake batter, right? He could shoot. We get that. And then the sausage for Keegan is like, oh my God, he plays through contact and he makes tough shots. So he drives into the lane, gets bumped, goes off the right leg and hits a right-handed like floater type of thing. And we saw that in summer league. And I'm like, I didn't see that in college. And then the egg would be, it's just, he has no nerves. His passing is incredible. That lob to Rashawn, it's like, what can't this guy do? And so just seeing him grow is extremely exciting. And, you know, again, I don't see a ceiling, honestly, other than, yeah, he's not super bouncy. He's not, you know, a Giannis or a Jaren Jackson Jr. level athlete, but this kid is special. And I think we're very lucky to have him.
I don't know much else to say about the team that's going to be on the court. I do want to say for anyone listening that if you don't have a Twitter account, I don't know, you got to be a sports fan, you have to have a Twitter account these days, I feel like. So get a Twitter account. And if they win the first 10 games, you can come celebrate with us. If they lose the first 10 games, you can come commiserate with us on the Cap Talk Twitter Spaces. We'll be there no matter what, and hosting, and you can talk. Like, it's not like anyone, we're like a couple of people that are the experts in their own mind are taking questions one at a time, and, you know, just they then putting them back down in the audience. You can come up and talk and have a conversation with us, so feel free to check that out.
Special thanks to Meg, Daly, and John for joining me this week. Be sure to check out their Cowbell Talk Spaces after the game tomorrow. And as always, go Kings!